And welcome. Thank you so much for joining us right here today on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. This is Ellen Kamai, and I'm so happy that you're joining us today. We love to meet with you, and that could be in person or virtually. We actually lead lots of classes on ground where you can come and meet us in person. And to find out where, just go to naturalnurse.com calendar. Also, we have a wide array of classes available online, and some of them are scheduled, which are on the calendar there, and some of them are in person. I have probably over 100 people who study with us right now and are being apprentices, learning to become professional herbalists, or learning about another professional aspect of how you can incorporate natural medicine into your career besides incorporating it into your life. Of course, we have lots of people who call who just want to know what should they use for themselves and their family in terms of natural remedies, perhaps rather than a pharmaceutical to control and deal with how they feel. So all those things are available to you. Private consultations with myself or with Dr. Eugene Zamperone, on-ground classes where you come and work with us directly, online classes where we interact virtually, and career counseling where you learn how you can become a natural provider in your career. And there's many ways to do that, right? Anything from sales. For instance, there are sales of natural products. Another really, really big way to go is to incorporate it into whatever you're already doing. For instance, a recent client, after I spoke with her, she revealed, she hadn't even told me originally, that she has an esthetist license, someone who is a professional who works on skin. And what we did is just transform her business to be a natural esthetist. And she was able to purchase organically produced skincare products and start to offer her clients that. For an additional charge, of course, because they do cost more. And then she started getting more and more clients who wanted organic esthetician. And then she transformed her entire business to where that's what she's featuring. And she bought a new sign and put it outside. And now all her clients, she transformed her entire client base to people who want natural and organic skincare. So you see, that was such an easy turnaround, and she was immediately doing what she wanted to do in life. And meanwhile, she took classes with me about homeopathics that are really good for different skin conditions that she can share with her patients and educate them about. She brought in a full line of natural and organic skincare products. So also, she's able to incorporate her knowledge about essential oil therapy and how you use aroma to actually stimulate various organ systems and herbal medicine. So she's learning each of these interventions, and then she can offer them in her practice. So she is thrilled. It completely transformed her life. She was going to stop being an esthetist because of the toxicity of the products that she was using. And meanwhile, instead, she increased her income. She increased her happiness. She increased the health and wellness of both herself and her clients just by working with the natural nurse and getting a natural nurse herbal certification. So you can do that too if you're interested. You can just email us, go to naturalnurse.com. You can join the mailing list just by going to the bottom left-hand corner and typing in your email, no other questions are asked, and you'll get our newsletter. And you can contact us just by going to naturalnurse.com contact. So we're so happy to hear from you. Today, our guest is Dr. Rob Brown. And Dr. Brown has been a practicing radiologist for the past 25 years. Throughout his career, he's witnessed firsthand the adverse effect of toxins on human health. He received his BA from Brown University and also his MD from the University of Miami, Leonard Miller School of Medicine. And he also worked in diagnostic radiology at the Western Pennsylvania Hospital. So Dr. Brown completed a neuroskeletal radiology fellowship at the University of California in San Diego, and he also authored several research papers subsequently published in peer-reviewed journals, including Radiology and Radiographics. So he is certainly a highly trained physician in conventional medicine, but today he's sharing with us a different topic than you might think, which is about the toxic home. And he wrote a book called Toxic Home, Conscious Home. So thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Brown.
Thank you, Evelyn. It's nice to speak with you again.
Yes, we had another show, and that was on one of our other stations, but now today we're on Progressive Radio Network, and thank you for joining us for our audience here today. Now, with your background in radiology, which seems very focused and very in-depth, you're certainly an expert in your field, how did you veer off into something that you might not think was part of your knowledge base, which is toxic homes?
Well, yes, as I've progressed through my career, I've worked in many different areas of the country, and I've seen that populations in different areas of the country are affected by different diseases, and I've decided that it's environmentally related. There's a lot, you know, of course we have genetic predisposition to certain diseases, and there are dietary effects certainly to our health. But environmental impacts on our health is something that I think is under considered, you know, in the medical realm. And so my book was designed to try to help people become healthier at home, and in that way they would become more they wouldn't be sick so often. And so that was the emphasis of the book.
Okay, but there could be all kinds of things that cause people in different areas to have different levels of illness, let's say. I mean, first of all, I have to say, because I travel a lot as well, and it seems to me that when I'm certain areas of the country, particularly what you might call the Farm Belt, and I would have thought the Farm Belt people would be the healthiest because they're growing all this food. However, you know, just sitting, let's say, in front of the 7-Eleven, or usually it's a Circle K out there, actually, if you've traveled, you know.
Right.
It's really amazing, the people walking in. I would say, number one, the obesity epidemic. I mean, it's outstanding.
It's true. It's true. Hold on a second. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Excuse me a second.
That's okay.
It's true. They're also surrounded by pesticides out there.
That's right.
And herbicides, and there's all kinds of chemicals out in the farming belt that are affecting people's health. There's all kinds of stuff that they use in the process of farming and storing food that they're exposed to. So you would think that they'd be the healthiest people, but they're not.
No, it's unfortunate. And I have to say, perhaps you've experienced this too. When I'm traveling in those areas and I stay at a hotel, of course, that the water that comes out of the shower is so amazingly toxic that I can hardly stand under it. When I was traveling a lot, I actually wound up bringing my own shower filter, unscrewing it and screwing in the shower filter right in the hotel because it just was this horrible amount of chlorine and who knows what else in that water.
I've noticed that, depending on what kind of hotel you stay in, you're bombarded with, as you mentioned, chlorinated water, or there's toxins from room. They put stuff in the carpet to deodorize it, which then emits volatile organic compounds into the air. So you're breathing those in. They can give you headaches and other health effects. And there's also usually an EMF emitter. There's very strong EMF in a lot of those hotel rooms. And on top of that, the light that usually comes pouring into the window at night, because the curtains aren't quite large enough to shield to completely block out the ambient light from outside, and you really are you're put at risk every time you stay in a motel or a hotel like this, because you're being bombarded with toxins.
Now, so what made you come to that realization, Dr. Brown? Because unfortunately, I don't know if you have found this to be the case, but I have actually found medical doctors in particular as a class, let's say, of people, rather, I would say, stubbornly not always accepting that environmental toxicity might be part of the disease process, what initiates it.
Well, you're right. You're very right, and it's the rare exception that considers. I've had many personal experiences, but one I'll share with you. I was painting my living room, and I used one of these faux plaster finishes. And a few days into the project, I started developing nosebleeds, and I didn't link it to the paint initially. Although I was working on the air chapter in my book. I had all the windows open, I had fans in the room, and yet the air, I could still smell the fumes from the paint. But after a few days, I had such bad hemorrhage out of both of my nostrils, it was uncontrollable. I ended up going to the emergency room, and I was examined by an ER doctor. This was at a university hospital where I live, and he examined me, and he said that he thought that I should go to an ENT because he couldn't see all the way up into the nasal cavity, and he said, that he wanted to make sure I didn't have a tumor because he couldn't explain why I was hemorrhaging. And I said to him, well, could it be from volatile organic compounds from the paint? And he looked at me like I had two heads.
Wait a minute. What made you even have that revelation, Dr. Brown? Was it something you read or just
reading,
felt
yes,
it
I was
innately?
Reading, I was doing a lot of research for my book, and each chapter I researched heavily. I went through all these scientific articles about whatever the topic was. And so I was actually working on the air chapter at that time. And so I was reading about volatile organic compounds and how they off-gas from paints and glues and building materials, and that they can cause symptoms. They can cause irritation of the mucosa, but they can also be absorbed into the bloodstream and cause chronic diseases. And so this would have been an acute reaction to these chemicals in the air. He looked at me like I had two heads, but as soon as I asked the question, I knew the answer. You know how that is? And so
right. He
gave me
it's
my
an inner truth, but in your case, I mean, you are obviously a deep researcher. You have, a million degrees of the highest order, which don't come easily and don't come without looking into things deeply and reflecting and analyzing. So I think the decision you had, although it was a personal experience, was not just experiential, but you dug into it and you said, wow, the facts are here.
Yes, yep. And I've seen so many of the things that I wrote about and that I researched. I've seen so many of them in talking to people in my practice to a lesser extent, because as a radiologist, I don't relate to too many people. As a radiologist, sometimes I'll do fluoroscopic studies such as upper GI series and small bowel series and barium enemas, and when I do those kinds of studies, I do have the opportunity to talk to a patient and ask them about their health. And so that was another opportunity that I had to correlate, say, people's dietary habits to things like gluten sensitivity and celiac disease, which didn't even exist when I first started my practice. Nobody had celiac disease 25 years ago. So these are some of the conditions that a lot of people in our society are suffering with unnecessarily, in my opinion. They just require a little bit of modification in our daily habits.
Well, so in that way, it's unnecessary. But the environment, like you talk about toxic home, conscious home. So are you saying that you can influence the toxicity of what's around you, at least to some extent?
Absolutely. In the home, we should have control of our homes. That's the one environment that we spend most of our time in, and we really do have control. In most cases, we have control over the environment in the home. Sometimes, people are receiving EMF, let's say from an exterior source outside of the home that permeates through the home that's hard to eradicate, but other than that, we do have the ability in most cases to create a healthy environment in their home. It just requires being conscious. That was why I came up with that title. I think, you know, consciousness and awareness is crucial so that when you approach things in your home, let's say the materials you're going to cook your meal with, if you look at the pan, for instance, and it's you're using a nonstick coating, and it's got some abrasions in it, perhaps that's something you need to throw out.
Well, let's talk about that a little more deeply, Dr. Brown. So you're telling us that those Teflon pans, probably some people have heard about this before, but why don't you go into that a little bit more deeply?
So, yes, the coating on these nonstick pans, they used to use a chemical called PFOA, which is a biopersistent particle that is associated with negative health effects. And now the pans, you'll go into the store, you'll see that they're PFOA-free, but yet they contain other chemical coatings to make them nonstick. And those coatings can infiltrate the food that you're cooking in the pan. If the pan's heated too high, they can also off-gas and get into the air, and you can inhale them. In fact, if you have a pet bird at the house and you heat one of these pans up too high, it can kill the bird, because the gas from the pan can be so toxic to a bird that it kills it. So, I don't recommend any of these nonstick pans, except for perhaps titanium, ceramic, any solid coating such as that is fine, or the anodized aluminum is fine as long as it's not abraded and scratched. But aluminum pans...
So that's really good information. You know, I myself gave up those nonstick pans years ago because of hearing this exact information that you just shared with us. So I had no Teflon. But I did try more recently where they're lined with this really hard-baked ceramic.
Right.
And I looked for research about it being toxic. I didn't find any. But also, since I'm quite sensitive and into this for more than, truthfully, 5 decades in terms of being environmentally aware, I actually, when I cook with those, I don't feel there's just this feeling now. I don't taste any toxicity. I don't feel there's any toxicity. Do you know of any good science showing, in fact, they are as safe as you're even stating that they are?
You know, I've read that they're safe. I can't come up with a specific article, you know, on the spot, but I believe that I do have some references in my book about that they're safe, the safety of ceramic. As long as they're properly prepared, and they're, you know, the ones in this country, I would say, are properly prepared. If you import ceramic cooking materials from, say, China, they don't have quite the same regulation of using toxic heavy metals and things that we do. So I would recommend buying, you know, a product that is, you know, do a little bit of research before you buy a ceramic product. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. They're not all the same.
Okay, that's important. That's excellent information. Yeah, I've tried those and they seem really well. Now, yesterday, Dr. Brown, I was wandering around in the mall, which I rarely do, because I live in Florida specifically, so I can walk all winter, but I happen to be in New York for the holiday season, mm-hmm. and it's freezing here as far as I'm concerned. So I went to the mall to walk, just because I like to walk 2 to 3 miles a day. And, you know, when I pass these candle stores and these bath product stores,
yeah.
even into the mall, that smell to me is so toxic. I
yeah.
sort of immediately get a sort of a closed throat and a throbbing in my head. What's up with that stuff?
Okay, the industry has created all types of fragrances, and they are basically chemicals, like I mentioned earlier with the paint fumes, volatile organic compounds. They may smell like what they're supposed to be imitating, but they have a different physiological effect. And so a lot of the, especially paraffin-based candles and potpourris and these fragrances that are so prevalent in retail stores now, they're not natural fragrances. They're created in chemical labs and in factories, and they can be toxic, just, you know, even more toxic than you would imagine. And but you know, there are definitely companies out there now that are promoting the idea of essential oils, and that, you know, an essential oil is a way to bring natural fragrance into the home that will have a beneficial health effect. But you have to look for them, and you have to. There are a couple of companies out there that really take pride in producing pure product, and it's a world of difference. And although the chemist will tell you, well, the product is identical in its chemical composition, there's a different physiological effect, and so it really makes a difference what kind of candle you buy. And you know, a lot of candles are paraffin-based, and so when you're lighting a paraffin-based candle in your home, it's, you know, paraffin is a petroleum product. So you're filling your air with the gases created by burning petroleum, a petroleum-based product. And one of them in particular, called acrolein, is carcinogenic. So by burning candles in your home, you're polluting the air. Now, there are candles such as beeswax candles and soy candles. As long as it's 100% beeswax or 100% soy, those are fine. You're not going to be bringing carcinogenic gases into your home. But even if a candle is labeled beeswax, if it doesn't say 100% beeswax, it may only be 51% beeswax and 49% paraffin. So you need to be kind of aware of the deceptions of labeling, you know, labeling requirements. So that's another thing that I like to bring about in my book.
You're not kidding. Wow, what a great point that is, Doctor. You know, with labeling requirements, since I do so much work, particularly in the nutraceutical industry with regulatory, you know, let's say something like the word natural flavors.
Right.
Under that word, you can fit paragraphs and paragraphs full of so many toxic compounds, and it's
right.
allowed to be just lumped under that natural flavors category.
Right. Well, you know, we're dealing with thousands, potentially, you know, thousands of chemicals and food additives, and they lump them into categories like generally recognized as safe, or, you know, there's all kinds of wastebasket terms to throw them all into to make it easier to write laws and have rules of labeling and packaging and you know, things in the food industry that unfortunately don't all react the same way to the body. And so it is important to realize that these terms, some of these terms mean nothing. It depends on the industry.
That's exactly true. They are not regulated terms.
Right,
That's
they're
true.
Not regulated. Even in the personal care products industry, the term organic means nothing. There can be any type of a product. There can be any type of ingredient in a product that's labeled organic. It doesn't have a definition in that industry.
Right, not the same as like in a food industry where it is
right.
specifically defined, although they're always changing that definition. For instance, just this week, the administration changed the meaning of the word free-range chickens, because previously, to have a free-range label, the chickens had to be allowed to actually walk outside in a yard. That
right.
has now been changed, just this week, by the way, so that you no longer have to allow them access to the outside, and you can still call them free range.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I didn't hear that.
I know. They snuck that one in. So we're going to take just a little break right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, and I'd like all our listeners to know we are listening to a fascinating discussion with Dr. Rob Brown. And Dr. Brown is a medical doctor from the University of Miami, and also got a degree from Brown University. And although he is a doctor and highly trained in radiology, we are talking about his book, Toxic Home, Conscious Home, which he wrote with the same degree of intense investigatory talent that he has learned in his regular job of being a doctor. So we will be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
On this edition of the Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss an herb we all know and love, cinnamon.
Ah, the spicy, sweet smell of cinnamon. Everyone recognizes the familiar aroma of this common kitchen spice. But did you know that cinnamon is an exotic plant bark with a long history of medicinal use in many countries throughout the world? Cinnamon was listed as an herb with medicinal properties in Chinese literature as early as 2700 BC. It is described in the Chinese medical text, the Tang Materia Medica, written in 659 AD. Cinnamon also enjoys traditional use in Ayurvedic medicine, the ancient healing art of India. It is mentioned in the Book of Moses and has been cultivated in Ceylon and Sri Lanka since 1200 AD, where much of the world's supply is still grown.
In Europe, cinnamon was regarded as a rare and precious spice. Many pharmaceutical substances, such as cough syrups and digestive tonics, contain cinnamon. It was also used as an incense and in perfumes. According to Chamberlain, writing in France in 1887, cinnamon possesses the greatest antiseptic properties. Cinnamon is gathered from the dried inner bark of the branches of a small tropical evergreen laurel tree. The bark is peeled off, and as the pieces are dried, they curl up into quills. These are the common cinnamon sticks that are used in herb teas and for baking.
In Chinese medicine, cinnamon is one of the most widely used warming herbs to aid in circulation and digestion. It is a common ingredient in small amounts in tea used for nausea during pregnancy. It is also used following delivery to decrease hemorrhage. Cinnamon raises vitality, warms and stimulates all the vital functions of the body, counteracts congestion, improves the digestive system, relieves abdominal spasms, and aids in peripheral circulation. The essential oils contained in cinnamon include eugenol, cinnamonic aldehyde, methyl eugenol, tannins, and mannitol, which give cinnamon its sweet flavor. It also contains cinzenolin and cinzenolol, which are both known insecticides.
Try putting some liquid soap and cinnamon in a spray bottle and use on plants as an organic bug repellent. Cinnamon is also included in many medicinal recipes that are used for lice, scabies, and other skin parasites. Cinnamon has antifungal, antiviral, and bactericidal activities. It has been shown to suppress E. coli, Staphylococcus, and Candida albicans.
So, listeners, the next time you inhale that sweet, spicy aroma, remember there's more to cinnamon than meets the nose as you reach into your natural medicine chest.
Welcome back to more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Thank you so much for joining us today. This is Ellen Kamai, The Natural Nurse, and you can find us at naturalnurse.com. You can get in touch to find out more about how you can use natural remedies for yourself and your family by setting up a private consultation, or we can have a professional discussion on how you can integrate natural knowledge into your career expression. So that's another class we have called Careers in Natural Health. And of course, a variety of information, and you can join us in person, on ground, or online at naturalnurse.com. Check the calendar or send us an email. Today, we are with our guest, Dr. Robert Brown, and we are talking about his book, fascinating explanation he's been giving us so far, Toxic Home, Conscious Home. So thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Brown.
Thank you for having me.
Now, we talked about pans, nonstick pans. That was a very good discussion. You talked about candles, and I guess you mean with candles the other air fresheners that they sell as well?
That's right. Most of the potpourri out in the market, they contain volatile organic compounds. That's why they smell, you know, fragrant, but they're not good for you, not like essential oils. So I recommend if people like to have fragrance in the home, have a diffuser, buy some essential oils and use those to make the air in the home fragrant.
Yes, that's a great suggestion. And even within essential oils, there are some that are more pure and some that are less pure. So it takes a little bit of an education. But when those scents hit your nose, When you're sensitive, like I shared I am, it really has a completely different feeling than when you get a whiff of those highly toxic chemicals.
That's right. You know, if you smell a rose, you know, that has fragrance, it smells wonderful. You know, it's an experience. If you smell a rose, a chemical that smells like rose, it doesn't have the same effect. It can give you a headache. You know, there's a different physiological effect between the two types of aromas. And so, yeah, I think most people should start to phase out the artificial fragrances and go for essential oils.
Yeah, I would state that actually more emphatically, just to say everybody should not use them, period. Because right. Essential oils are widely available now. They're not that expensive because you use a tiny bit at a time. And it's a completely different experience than using, we don't want to name brands, but things you spray around or plug in, those little plug-in scent things that are horrible. Full of toxic chemicals. And thank you so much for writing your book, Toxic Home, Conscious Home, so that you're educating people about the difference. Now, what are some of the common deceptive marketing techniques used by the conventional food industry?
Well, you know, there's the whole idea of all natural. If a label says all natural, that doesn't really mean anything, right? We were talking about some of the about the personal care products industry. It needs to say organic, and organic has a certain there's a strict adherence that the food grower or manufacturer has to adhere to get the organic label. There's also the no GMO label. That can be deceptive, unfortunately, because as we're finding out, a lot of the there's a label that says there's no glyphosate in the food now, as far as I understand. I'm trying to remember. This has recently changed also, but you know they've discovered that there's glyphosate in breakfast cereals and in oats and wheat products, even though they don't say it might not be a GMO food, it can still be contaminated with glyphosate. So that's
true. Well, the problem is, of course, in the United States, although not true in most of the rest of the world, it's actually not legal to list that something is GMO right on the label.
Right.
Everywhere else in the world, they have that. We're the only country just about that doesn't have that. And there were wars going on for years in terms of allowing that very clear labeling. The labeling law that finally got through, which has not even been implemented yet, is going to be very complex. You'll have to have a cell phone. You'll have to pass your cell phone over that little black square, whatever that is. I'm too old to know what that is.
Right.
And then get taken to some website and then have to figure out if the product is GMO. How many people are going to bother to do that?
Exactly. But we're realizing, at least I think, one of the biggest problems with the GMO industry is the use of glyphosate. And glyphosate is now found in foods that are not GMO. So it's become such a cesspool, if you excuse my expression. We've contaminated our food supply with this chemical. And it's been registered as an antibiotic. It's a metal chelator, and I don't know if the audience knows what that is, but that means that it binds to metals, and so it takes them out of circulation. And so organisms such as plants and bacteria and us included, we don't have use of that metal anymore, and so plants die if they don't have access to metals, and the bacteria in our gut will die if we keep ingesting glyphosate. And so it's become, I think, one of the reasons why a lot of people have this gluten sensitivity and digestive problems is because of chronic ingestion of glyphosate.
Well, I'm sure that's part of it. Of course, also, the exact variety of wheat that is grown now is very different from what was used historically.
Right.
There is a kind of wheat called einkorn wheat, which is much shorter, much denser, much higher in protein and nutrients, but more difficult to harvest. And that's one of the reasons they switched over to this much more toxic kind of gluten, which is highly sprayed as well as high in gluten rather than the older forms of wheat in the past. So it's very complex, and it certainly has to do with marketing and deception, as you point out in your book, Toxic Home, Conscious Home. Now tell us about your feelings on plastic water bottles.
So, a lot of people think it's okay to drink out of a plastic water bottle now if it says that it's BPA-free. And most people are aware that BPA, bisphenol A, was a chemical that has been used in the manufacturing of a plastic water bottle. And it can leach into the water and have estrogen-mimicking effects. So when you drink water from a plastic water bottle, you're actually ingesting small bits of this estrogen-mimicking compound. And so it can cause physiological effects on the body that are as if your body is making estrogen. Now, that's not a good thing because excess estrogen has been linked to breast cancer, uterine cancer, male breast development called gynecomastia, and obesity, and so many other health effects. We don't want to have excess estrogen in our diet. So that's one thing. But the problem is that when this whole campaign against BPA surfaced and, vendors were saying, oh, BPA-free, BPA-free, what they did was they supplanted the BPA with other chemicals, notably BPS and BPF, which have also been shown to have estrogen-mimicking capability. And so even a bottle may be labeled BPA-free, but it has a very, very similar chemical that can also leach into the water and cause the same hormonal effect, and yet most people don't know that yet.
Well, one thing that I notice many mothers do pay attention to, of course, all of us might be using those bottles, but what about even bottles that they market for babies and they do have a giant BPA-free insignia on them?
Same thing. Plastic is plastic.
So you feel all plastic is equally as toxic, or are there some that might tend to leach more chemicals than others?
Well, I think that, what you just said is true. Some leach more chemicals than others, but what I would say is for routine use, I would stay away from plastics. In an emergency,
period.
In an emergency, certainly nothing's going to happen to you if you drink from a plastic water bottle, once or twice a week or on rare occasion, but your day-to-day should not be to drink from plastic water bottles. What I do at my home is I have a high-quality gravity drip system, so I purify the water coming in. I have a well, but if you have a tap with municipal water, you purify it at home with a high-quality gravity drip system so you can take as many of the contaminants out of it as possible, including lead and chloramine or whatever they're using to sanitize the water, and then store that water in a glass jar, a glass container, or stainless steel. And then I have these portable stainless steel bottles, and I bring them to work, to the gym, or to school. And so that's the water supply that I use. And there's no contamination with glass.
Right.
So
it's really much better. I guess people sometimes are worried about, first of all, it's heavier to carry, and second of all, it could always break.
It is heavier to carry. That's true. They have silicone sleeves on a lot of these glass bottles now, so that protects them, and it's worth it. I think it's definitely worth it.
I agree with you, and that's what I do. Or I will sometimes use brands of water that are actually sold in glass.
Yeah. Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah, I do that.
There's only a few, and they're not cheap, but You know, if I'm out and I don't have my glass bottle with me, sometimes I'll use that. So it is a really good idea to try to bring down plastic. And I will say a lot of communities, as well as on Long Island, Suffolk County already, and I know many places on the West Coast and other places throughout the country are banning a lot of plastic. Not so much about the toxicity, but about the environmental impact, to where what they do is they charge you to take a plastic bag at the grocery store, which is a pretty good deterrent.
Yeah, I like that. I saw that in Chicago when I was there a few months ago. Same thing. They were charging people for each plastic bag they used. It's a good system.
Yes, that's excellent. So Thank you so much for that information. Now, we're going to take a break in a few minutes, but first I'd like to just open up one more topic is about plastic wrap for wrapping food, aluminum foil and plastic food containers.
You know, it's the same sort of concept that when you put a plastic wrap or aluminum foil directly onto food, there's always the possibility that the chemicals from the plastic wrap or the aluminum from the foil will leach into the food that you're wrapping. And so particularly for the aluminum foil, acidic foods and foods that are hot will cause greater leaching of the aluminum than, say, a loaf of bread. But what I recommend is that people put a layer of unbleached parchment paper, which is not reactive, and cover the food first with that and then put on the plastic wrap or the aluminum foil. And that way you're creating a natural barrier that will prevent the leaching of the chemicals from the product into the food. There's been, you know, an association of Alzheimer's disease with aluminum, and just as we talked about with the BPA in the plastic water bottles, you know, plastic wraps have all kinds of chemicals that, again, can leach into food, particularly oily foods and hot foods.
And so does aluminum. I always tell people, you know, then they go, oh, the aluminum is so good because, you know, you can crunch it up and it keeps it fresh in there. But one thing I have suggested, and let me know, Dr. Brown, author of Toxic Home, Conscious Home, if you think this is helpful at all, I tell people if they are insisting on using aluminum foil, put the aluminum foil down on the counter and then cover it with a piece of simple, plain, old-fashioned wax paper.
Uh-huh.
And then wrap the food. Do you think that's any better than the plastic wraps?
Well, you know, we do have two types of wax paper on the market. You don't want to use a paraffin-based wax paper for the same reason why you don't want to burn paraffin candles. Now, some wax papers are made with beeswax or shellac or carnauba wax. That's fine. Or soy wax. That's fine. But you don't want to wrap your food in a paraffin-based wax. So that would be my only comment about using wax paper.
And what is regular wax paper? Is that the paraben-based wax?
Probably, yeah. I mean, I'm not sure what brand you're talking, but yeah, it would say if you're going to use one that's made of beeswax or shellac or carnauba wax or soy wax, it'll say on the packaging. If it doesn't say, I would assume that it's paraffin-based.
Okay, that's very, very good advice. So we're going to take a little break right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z to allow our listeners to learn more about a lot of the wonderful shows we have here on Progressive Radio Network. You know, you can always download the app by just going to your friendly app store and looking for Progressive Radio Network or PRN. And you can also listen to our shows at PRN.FM because they're all archived, including our show today with Robert Brown, the author of Toxic Home, Conscious Home, and he is a medical doctor, giving us tons of great information today. And we will be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
I'm Gary Null, the founder of the Progressive Radio Network. Today we have more than 80 producers bringing forth the most progressive and most liberating information, the kind of information you do not regularly hear on any of the mainstream or alternative media. You can help us now Up to this point, I have virtually supported the Progressive Radio Network, all of its expenses and payroll, myself. But we would like to expand our reach. We'd like to do far more. We'd like to be able to advertise on Facebook and let others know we exist. We are the number one Progressive Radio Network in the world. In fact, we have programs that are most listened to in all of Progressive Radio. But we could go a lot further. Our message could reach a lot more people, especially at a time when people are desperate for honest, objective insights on the important topical issues of our day. How can you help? It's simple. Go to prn.fm, go to our main page. In the upper right-hand corner, you'll see a little button, Support Now. And then whatever you can contribute on a monthly basis will make a big difference. It will help get the message out. It will help inform more people, give them more choices. This is where you'll hear in the independent candidates and the people looking to challenge the corruption in government and industries. But we need to get our reach out further. So please, whatever you can afford on a monthly basis, and there's some suggestions there, and it'll be automatic. All right, thank you very much for continuing to help us help you and the rest of the world on these important issues.
Folks, my name is Jordan Valerie. My pronouns are she, her, hers, and I'm here to tell you about the Millennial Politics Podcast. We speak with the next generation of progressive candidates, activists, and organizations dedicated to restoring our democracy and protecting our civil rights and liberties. Make sure to stay tuned for Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on the Progressive Radio Network, to hear the most recent episode of our podcast and follow us on social media and iTunes to stay up to date with everything Millennial Politics.
And welcome back to more right here on The Natural Nurse. And Dr. Z, get in touch with us at naturalnurse.com. You can look at our books. We've written about 15 books, including The Natural Medicine Chest, Arthritis, The Alternative Medicine Definitive Guide, Weight Loss, The Alternative Medicine Definitive Guide, Cycles of Life Herbs for Women, Supplements for Pain, Supplements for Virility and Vitality, and Synchronous Connections, A Personal Journey Through Non-Ordinary Reality, as well as hundreds of radio shows available to you for free and also on the podcast here at Progressive Radio Network. Today we have as our guest Dr. Robert Brown, and Dr. Brown is discussing very interesting topics in his book, Toxic Home, Conscious Home. And Dr. Brown, I do have another little question for you. In terms of radiology, which of course you are a specialist, I wonder if you would consider writing a book about how to, you know, best protect ourselves from X-rays and use them therapeutically in the least disadvantageous way possible.
I'm not sure I understand the question.
Well, in terms of X-rays, there are ways, you know, that people can, let's say, utilize X-rays that have a lower rate of damage to the body, or use them less often rather than just regularly all the time. I'm sure you're a complete expert on that topic as well.
So, yeah, you know, the technology for diagnostic medical imaging is really improving all the time. And now with digital imaging, the amount of radiation that one gets through an X-ray is minimal. It's come down significantly. Now, if you have a study like a CAT scan, that's giving you thousands of times more radiation than, say, an X-ray. And a fluoroscopic procedure like an upper GI series or a barium enema, that gives you a lot more radiation as well, or an angiogram. And there you're kind of at the mercy of the radiologist who's performing the study. Some people have more of a lead foot. You know, they press their foot on the pedal, and the radiation is continuously going while they're doing their procedure, while other people kind of tap the pedal intermittently to see, you know, every now and then what they're doing, and they get enough information to make the diagnosis, but they're not subjecting the patient to excessive radiation.
Right, so that's a smart use then, while you're getting
right.
the information. That's important. Now,
yeah.
what about, you wrote about so many other things in this book. It's really a great compendium. One thing that's a little interesting is, what about the fact that a super clean home is not necessarily the best way towards health?
The whole concept of the super clean home really came around before we knew about the microbiome. So that's the beneficial bacteria and fungi that live on our skin surface. And I like to think of them as a protective envelope that shields us from pathogenic bacteria in the environment. Now, if you have a super clean home and you're spraying antimicrobial agents in the air and on your countertops, and you're getting them on your skin, and you're perhaps inhaling them into your lung, you're killing off the beneficial bacteria that are living on your body. And that can cause you to be sick. That can cause hypersensitivity reactions. It can cause immunological problems, allergies. So we don't want to kill off our beneficial bacteria. It's really, we've learned that that's a very important part of our immune system. So what I recommend is that for routine cleaning, you try to use edible ingredients like vinegar, lemon juice, baking soda, things that you could eat without harming your bacteria, your beneficial bacteria, or your body. And then if there's a reason why you need to do an excessive over-the-top cleaning with bleach or some type of agent that's going to kill bacteria, in a heavy-duty way, wear gloves, use plenty of ventilation, make sure you don't inhale the fibers, not fibers, but the aerosol, and in that way just try to protect your microbiome and think of it as part of your body. That's really the whole idea.
Yeah, that's very good information. And it's interesting that people might not think those things work well, but you know, I'll tell you a great trick is baking soda. Even on baked-in grease, like if you have an oven or a pan that has, you know, a lot of stains on it and really baked-in grease, if you take baking soda, put it on the area, and add enough water just to make it into a paste, even in the oven, and then paint it on, when it's in that kind of consistency, let it dry. When you wipe it off, it works better than any of those magic cleaners that you see on TV.
Yes, you know, it's a really very basic acid-based chemistry is what a lot of cleaning agents are all about. You know, acids have a pH less than 7 and bases have a pH greater than 7. And so the cleaners that are anti-grease, they're alkaline, they're base, and baking soda is a base. So when you're going to make your homemade cleaning concoctions, you just follow the basic rules for acid-based chemistry, and you can absolutely clean your home that way. It's much, much healthier.
So I'm wondering why they just don't make more cleaning products that are less toxic.
I think that, you know, people don't want to put in any elbow grease. It's just, and people are, the industry is always trying to evolve to come up with something new. And that it's a chemist's dream, but yet it's not necessary. You know, for everyday living, just isn't.
Now, I know in your book, Toxic Home, Conscious Home, and by the way, what's the best way to get in touch with you, Dr. Brown, or to find your book, because we are getting towards the end of our time?
So I have a website, which is robbrownmd.com. I do write a blog, and I have some recommended products on my website, and people can email me through the website, certainly. The book is available on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com, as well as in some independent bookstores.
Oh, that's great. So it's widely available. It's a great name. It's called Toxic Home conscious home. Now, tell us why so many people are having difficulty sleeping these days, because many listeners could relate to that.
Yes, the whole idea of light pollution, it's interesting. We've brought light pollution into our bedrooms at night, it's not only visible light that we need to be concerned about. Electromagnetic frequency, which is part of the visible, part of the electromagnetic spectrum, it's a very low frequency, but it's part of the spectrum of what we consider just light. We can't see it, but it's a form of light that can also affect the brain. So this form of energy, whether it's light or EMF, causes the pineal gland in the brain to stop producing melatonin, because we need to have darkness at night. We're designed, like all animals, to have a bright sun during the day, or at least daylight during the day, and darkness at night. And that sequence is called a circadian rhythm. Our body gets used to this cycle, and so in winters in the northern latitudes, the nights are longer. We produce more melatonin at night, and the days are shorter. And in the summer, the reverse is true. And this kind of ties us into the earth. It ties us into the environment and all life forms in our environment, right? So if you are bringing light into the bedroom, so if you're looking at an LED screen on your laptop or your cell phone or your TV before you go to bed, your brain is getting this bright light into it, and it's going to delay your melatonin production. When you then add on top of that, you turn the lights off, and you have these little diodes in your bedroom that, even though your eyelids are down, your eyelids are still being illuminated by these little indicator lights. That's telling your brain that the sun's still out. There's still light in the room. So it's affecting people's sleep. So what I'm recommending is that people cover up these diodes or unplug appliances in the bedroom, to unplug the TV, or cover these little lights with a physical barrier. That's one thing you can do. You can turn off the TV and stop looking at LED screens at least 30 minutes before you plan to go to bed, because that delays melatonin production. The other thing to be aware of is not to sleep with any EMF source in your bedroom. So if there's a Wi-Fi router in your bedroom, turn it off. If you sleep with a cell phone by your bed, put it in airplane mode so it's not going to be sending and receiving information while you're trying to sleep. And so these are some suggestions that I have for people that have trouble sleeping. It's also important to pick a bedtime and stick with it.
Are great suggestions, Dr. Rob. And I do want to tell you thank you so much for being our guest right here today on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And I'd like to wish you a wonderful holiday season. Thank you for joining us today, Dr. Rob.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
That was Dr. Rob Brown, author of Toxic Home, Conscious Home. And listeners, I'd like to wish you the best and hope that you stay healthy.